Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How would you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset, and that's when you can reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. Look, it's summertime, transfer window is coming up. It's gonna get crazy. So if you ever just wanna, again, take a step back and relax, read the transfer rounds, read the gossip rumors, grab a Coors Light. It'll be perfect companion for all those transfer merry-go-rounds. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when the beer is cold. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Now that it's finally hot in Minnesota, I'm gonna be looking for an easy beer to drink. And Coors Light is perfect for that. It's lagered, it's cold filtered, and it's cold packaged. It's, again, made to chill. It's crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, perfect for a moment to unwind. And so when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And, as always, celebrate.
This is Joe Cole.
This is Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and you're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
Oi, oi, what's going on, everybody?
Oh, hello.
Brandon, cool, Dan. Busby.
Take your time, Busby. Late to the party, per usual. Dan's a bit of a diva.
This is a locker room sesh, right? It's a little bit more chill, it's a little bit more relaxed, it's an opportunity for us to have a casual conversation and be more engaged with a live participation.
Yeah, usually I just have to talk to you idiots, but now I can talk to everybody else, which makes it a lot better. So I'm thankful for that, for the advent of call and response technology, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this goes. We're super excited to test it out, obviously, and try this new way of connecting with a lot of listeners and Chelsea fan. But if you're unfamiliar, I recognize most of the names in here. We do a podcast about Chelsea, so if you like Chelsea, you like podcasts.
Shock!
Check it out, London is Blue podcast on all podcast platforms. Social media, London Blue Pod is where you can find us. If you want to vet us and check us out beforehand. My name is Brandon. We got Dan and Nick. We're the three hosts of said podcast, and we usually do match preview pods, but in partnership with Blue Wire, they want us to check out Locker Room. So we thought we'd try using Locker Room specifically to engage more with listeners and other Chelsea fans, just to make it a little bit more of like conversational rather than us just talking all the time and reacting. So Nick, that is why we are here and what the plan is for said evening.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. If you've ever listened to the Fancast, for example, I think one of the cooler parts of their platform is that they can kind of just take live questions, whereas we're usually shut into our own little world when we record the show, just to limit distractions and make the best audio quality experience for you guys. So this is a bit of a unique one. It's a little bit more call and response. So there will be points. We have a little bit of a running script, which Brandon will get to in a second. But we have points in which we would love to hear from you. So you can, I think, request to speak, and we can bring you in to speak, and then make sure that we get you in and out in a timely fashion. But this is more about you than it is about us. So please feel free to speak up, to raise your hand. We'll bring you in. We'll hopefully volley on a couple of points and make this really fun. So do not be scared. We don't bite.
All right. I will be running the computer just in case we need to fact check anything or look anything up. Dan will be watching the chat as well. Nick will probably be doing speaker requests. So anyways, just to kick it off at the beginning, in case you are confused, Chelsea are playing Everton tomorrow for us stateside. I don't think we have anyone from Aussie land probably tuning in because it's the middle of the night there. But anyways, it's a battle of fourth versus fifth. All right. And Everton have a match in hand. So only one point separates us. We need to keep that gap since they have the match in hand. Dan, a couple of different things that the Chelsea website kind of pulled out of their pre-match article. Some things I think are worth kind of helping set the stage as we lead into just our typical kind of match preview.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things, and I also would you know, be remiss if I don't plug the fact that at least two of us, Brandon, were able to make Elizabeth Hellenek's stream this morning to talk about this match as well.
she didn't pay me enough.
Wow. The low cost of free. We charge tens of cents to appear on other productions. But we talked about actually the fact that this Everton side are generating scoring opportunities, which coming up against a side that has pretty much allowed no team to achieve above a 0.7 expected goal since really Tuchel has come around, that it puts us in a position to be very favorably matched up, Nick.
Yeah, I think so. I think the way that the defense is kind of shaping up, we're hard to score against. It, you know, we'll always come down to the question of, can we score one or more goals to complete the win? And like, that's the scary part. You know, you guys have all watched these matches. You know, it seems like we need a moment of magic in these games more than, you know, we have kind of free flowing offensive football. So, you know, Mason Mount obviously stepped up against Liverpool, which was a tremendous goal. Olivier Giroud with the bike against Atletico Madrid. And then you kind of go searching for some of these free flowing goals, Brandon. And it's not really clear what the plan is in the final third. But the one thing I did note after our Liverpool review is that when Chelsea were more even in possession with the ball, the offense looked like it had a lot more fluidity to it. Looked like there was more room for our attackers to run in behind because they weren't, you know, pressed into this small area trying to find little nooks and crannies in a opposition defense. So hopefully Tuchel's seen some of this stuff, Brandon, and is able to kind of adjust his game plan a little bit so that we have a little bit more balance.
Well, I think the good news for us is we have far less injury problems than Everton do right now. As you like read through Ancelotti's update, it's literally injury after injury or players just coming back from injury. So they're not even at 100% or fresh. So I think there's going to be opportunities for us to hopefully play a weakened Everton side, because as we've seen this season, when they are at their best, they can do a lot of damage. And a lot of it comes, you know, like you said, Calvert-Lewin, who just came back from injury himself. If they're missing a lot of players, which we can get into a little bit, I just look at timing and say this is probably one of the best times to play this Everton side that we can. And it's a reunion with good old Uncle Carlo, Mr. Ancelotti. I think a fan favorite, if everyone thinks back to managers.
100%.
And I think Matt Law on one of our previous episodes talking about this feels like he's the one that Abramovich really regrets sacking so quickly instead of giving him time to really build something. And I think we've seen that, you know, in 1.5 short seasons at Everton, he's built something very quickly. And if you can do that with those resources, you know, again, imagine what you could do at Chelsea. So, we'll have to see how he is. Dan, you're Mr. Okay. Go ahead, Nick. Yeah.
No, go for it.
I was gonna say, Dan, you're Mr. Lineups. Typically, I think it's pretty safe to say that it's going to be a back three versus a back three.
Yeah, I think that is a super easy one. So I appreciate you teaming me up with something that I can predict in this episode, and then it is actually correct. So, there's a couple of interesting players in there. You look at Godfrey, you look at Keane, you look at Holgate. They've done pretty well. I think really in defense, though, the danger player, it usually who runs the risk of actually being brilliant or absolutely hilariously comical in his execution is Lucas Digne. There are times he makes the most bonehead decision, and then there's times where he just delivers up a beautiful cross, Nick. And you hope that we're getting the maniacal version of him in this match.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to kind of see how these lineups match up. I mean, we always check out the Chelsea articles before, you know, a pre-match pod, usually our match preview pod. But It looks like Yuri Mina is going to be out for Everton, which means you're going to have some sort of back three that includes Holgate, Godfrey, and Michael Keane, which is, look, I mean, that's a pretty stout back three, to be fair to him. I mean, I think all three of those players have kind of outperformed this season. And, you know, Everton have not been giving away a boatload of goals this year. I mean, they're a pretty stingy defensive unit. So, you know, I think we'll be kind of, you know, the Spider-Man meme pointing back at each other a little bit tomorrow, you know, in the way that our teams have set up. I think the difference will certainly be in, you know, how the midfields kind of clash, who's in our midfield, how that all works. But yeah, I think the back three for Everton are going to be very interesting. I think their fullbacks may be more attacking minded than our fullbacks, Stan.
I think that there's one funny stat because I was looking at a couple of just Everton accounts to see, you know, what type of banter they were getting on with ahead of the match. And they had a worst ever losing streak at Anfield. Liverpool 6, Everton 5, which brought me quite a bit of joy heading into this, that at least there's one thing we can agree upon before the Toffees take flight against us tomorrow, is that it is always fun to take a shot at Liverpool.
Well, they keep losing. That's fine. You know, look, do I revel in every Liverpool loss? Do I revel in the fact that they have 6 European Cups and also 6 straight home losses, Brandon? I do. I really do.
All right. Well, I want to throw this out there to our lovely audience and just see what your guys' kind of temp check is for this match going into this one. Obviously, who thinks, like, does anyone here have like a strong opinion one way or another based on where Chelsea are at and Everton are at, and kind of like a very high level view of where this is going to go? Oh, I'll see if we get any speaker requests. I want to offer that up to the panel.
And that's just a general thing throughout the evening too. If you want to chime in on something, or Dan's take infuriates you like it does me on most shows.
I do. Jake Thurman, you're always have an opinion in the Discord.
Mr. Subtweet Nick Verlaney on Discord himself.
Let's do it. Life just a subtweet of Nick Verlaney?
Whoa. Hello.
Jake.
Hey, what's up?
You always have a good analysis and a breakdown. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being super confident, 1 being not, how are you feeling going into this Everton match tomorrow?
I'm going to be honest. I'm feeling pretty high after that, the way we looked against Liverpool. And I think Everton always gets a sneaky goal against us, and I think Tuchel will stop that. I think the way we've set up, and I also feel like we're due going forward. So I think I'm going to bold prediction, brace for Timo Werner.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Brace for Timo. Oh. And then I think we need the win this time because of what happened today with Man U. I still think we can get ahead of them if we can keep pace this weekend. So it's got to happen. It's got to happen.
Well, I like that. All right. Scott's in next before we get to Dan and Nick to hear how confident you guys are. All right. Jake's gone. Mr. Scott, our Kansas representative. Sorry, Nick. What is up, Scott?
I'm in there and say that it's bold going.
Did we lose him?
Oh, Scott. I couldn't tell if that was me. I couldn't hear him. Are you?
Yeah, I think we lost you, Scott. Can you try again?
Check. You gotta keep the internet going faster. We'll see if he comes back. I'm looking for scales of 1 to 10. If you guys want to throw it in the chat as well. Looks like Torin agrees with Jake. Raul has a question. If we lose this game, is it definitely blow to our top 4 chances? We'll have to save that. I think we should save that for a little bit later. All right. Anyways, while we wait, Dan, same question. 1 to 10 confidence rating. How confident are you going into this one to, you know, take on the other side of Liverpool?
Yeah, you know, I would say that actually before I looked at the numbers this morning, I was kind of in the mid range, maybe like a 5, but I feel like I've bumped it up to probably a 7.5 at this point.
Integers, please.
Whole numbers. I'm going to say it's going to shade an 8 just because I think the way that we are set up, we do not give teams a good opportunity to shoot. Everton needed luck against us last time, and I don't think they're going to be afforded that same amount of defensive lapse. I think the only real question, and I'm sure this is why Nick is going to have a much lower rating, is going to be where does the goal come from in open play? Because when you have this type of lineup, you are very limited with the amount of attacking players you have on the pitch.
Look, I will say this. I will get into lineups because I think that is the major question with Chelsea these days. But I think the one I was feeling more confident than Dan, which is just an anomaly, something that never happens on this podcast. But then it got knocked down because of the little blurb that Chelsea put out. They have not won at Stamford Bridge in 25 times. So this is since November 1994. And that was the day that the new North Stand, i.e. the Matthew Harding Stand, was unveiled. So, look, we were – the reason I became a little less confident is because Brandon and Dan and I went to we've been lucky enough to go to Stamford Bridge quite a bit in our time as a podcast, but we ended up going to the game where Tottenham broke their streak at Stamford Bridge of 28 years without a win. God, what was that, 2017 or 2018? And so we've been there before. I hope this one continues, but I hate, it's like the commentator's curse when you see a number like that, Brandon.
We'll see. I think, did I get a number? Did I miss it?
So give me a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Boo! Boo!
I love it. So, look, there's some pretty aggressive ones. Torrance, 8 out of 10. Cal, 7 out of 10. Kyle, 7 out of 10. Vinesh, 7 out of 10. David, 10 out of 10. Seems like the lads are flowing and loving their football right now and are playing with some pragmatism. I think we find a way to get 3 points, but with a bit more attacking power tomorrow. Gary Brandon Hayes Buzzy. Is in the chat.
Gary Hayes dropping the 10. He's dropping 10. A 9.
10 out of 10, 8 out of 10 from Miles Taylor, also getting a 7 out of 10. Like, I feel like I have to go above and beyond, Dan. You're an 8. You don't give me much room. So I'm going to throw the 10 spot down. The injury list on Everton is massive. The momentum swing that Chelsea on right now, undefeated since Tuchel came in, not conceding any goals. It just seems to be in a situation where one team is trending up, the other team is just trying to field a strong 11. I mean, if Everton are to the point where they're hoping Tom Davies is fit to play against us, what a blessing that is. Because if Tom Davies is in there, like, we have less to worry about going forward. And I just want to take them while they were at this moment of weakness and while we are in this surge of momentum. Again, to Nick's point, we're not banging in the goals yet, but we're getting the wins. We're getting the results. And at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. So I think we should run into lineups, right? Tuchel with his lineups, he's always looking to throw in curveballs. We haven't really seen outside of the formation and a couple key players who is going to be in these lineups and things like that. So with that being said, do we want to go through full lineups, or do you guys want to maybe just call out some surprises you think are going to happen?
I think it's about surprises. You know, I don't think we have to go through the whole lineup because there's, you know, a couple guaranteed starters, right? You know, there's Mendy is going to be between the sticks. I think right wing back and left wing back, Nick, are probably two that, you know, do you see Callum Hudson-Odoi or Reece James? Do you see Alonso or Ben Chilwell are probably two of the questions, keeping in mind that Atletico Madrid is coming up. We've got, you know, kind of a midweek to think about as well.
Yeah, look.
Or end of the week, then following. So close fixtures.
That's not for, yeah, we have Leeds on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so look, some of this lineup does pick itself, to Dan's point. I think you will see the same back three, Aspi, Christensen, and Rüdiger. I think you will see Mendy. I think you're going to see Alonso, and I think you're going to see Reece James on Monday, because my rationale is that I think with Richarlison running down the left, you need someone like Reece to maybe throw a body in there, a little bit tougher defensively than maybe Callum is. But I do think you can afford to attack down Everton's left. And I think Alonso could come in and spell Ben Chilwell. Good Lord, can't talk. And make sure that we have some balance and hopefully get four. Maybe he's the source of the goal. Maybe he's going to score. So that's my thought on the back five.
Okay. I'm going to ask Techie or Taylor to throw any injury updates that we have, because I haven't seen anything on the website or anything like that, but I'm sure we might have some. So before I say something silly, I think that's important to get the official update from Techie, who's thrown out all of the updates as we need it. But I think outside of the back five, which, assuming, you know, Thiago Silva's still out, I could see him rotating a few of these positions. You know, it's going to be midfield too, but I think this is where we could see some rotation, right? We've seen Conte and Jorginho. We've seen Kova and Conte. We've seen Kova and Jorginho. You know, we just played Thursday. Is he going to rest and rotate in that middle too? I think that's something that we're going to have to try to work through. And then obviously he's attacking three wingers. It's just, it's all up in the air. So, while we're going through this, I guess, Gary, if you want to get in, cause I know you always love a good lineup discussion and a little bait and switch out there, maybe teasing. Let's see if I can get you on here. Until then, I'm going to go Jorginho and Kovacic in the middle. It's the classic 1-2 combo for Tuchel. And I think we're going to see Olivier Giroud up top with, I think Ziyech is going to get the hook for Pulisic and Timo Werner on the other flank. But Gary, friend, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing quite well. But
how's Minnesota? Is it snowing still?
No, it's gotten nice. Everything's melted. It's spring is looming, I hope.
Lovely. Spring has sprung.
Yeah, we hope so. But from a lineup perspective, how have you been taking to Tuchel and his lineups with the 3-4-3, and what do you think he's going to do against Everton? You said 10 out of 10. I matched you. So
I didn't know what I was voting for. I just saw these numbers, and I thought I joined late because it's late here in the UK, and I've just been doing some work for the program for Madrid and for the FA Cup. So I was working late and I thought I'd jump in because I remembered you guys were doing this. But Tuchel. Yeah, he started off right, didn't he? Obviously, there's a lot of emotion about how he got the job, but that's not his fault. I think he's made Chelsea hard to beat. He's obviously the defence looks a lot more resolute. I'm a little bit worried if he plays this system going forward for what it means for certain players, but obviously you can't fault him now, can you, at all?
Yeah, I mean we get the benefit of great results. You know, we've won some pretty fantastic in fantastic, you know, not necessarily fashion, but against opposition. You know, even Liverpool on a slide, Atletico Madrid away, even though it's not their home location. Just in general, it's the type of results that, you know, it looked like it was going to be a bit of a tough row of fixtures, and, you know, he came out on the right side of it. So I think it's hard to be, you know, it's easy to be critical, but it you can't be disappointed in how we've gotten along since he's come in.
No, exactly. I think what it reminds me of is when we first signed Mendy and then he made his Premier League debut against United, we went on that lovely run of clean sheets, and it wasn't exactly really expansive football, but it wasn't really boring either. But what they did, and then we had the game, you know, the 17 game unbeaten run before it all went to pot. It sort of reminds me of that period where he's working stuff out, and he sort of, which he's right to do. He doesn't want to come in and just go gung-ho or try to play a certain way where he hasn't got a lot of time on the training field, you know, to get these players into shape. Because I think you look at, we've got Leeds at the weekend, and I think the lead time into that game is probably the longest time we'd have had without a game in terms of getting players ready. So you see that he's just literally going game to game. So I think he's doing well. He's, you know, you can't really judge him until November, December time this year when he's had pre-season, he's had more time to get the players playing the system that he wants, and there's actually been a break. Because you think about it, his players have been playing for almost 2 years non-stop, even though there was a little COVID break, but you know, they haven't had a proper break. So I think that it's a lot to ask when a manager comes in mid-season and this season of all seasons, you know.
Well, that's true. You know, usually they get to go off on holiday during the break. Instead, they were locked down at home on those watt bikes, just trying to stay somewhat fit.
Yeah, exactly.
They haven't had like that mental decompression and time in the sun at Ibiza where they like to go.
Yeah, and the thing is as well is I'm not just saying this because I know this is an audience predominantly of Americans, but outside of Mason Mount, my favorite player in that squad is Pulisic. And that poor guy has had such a tough season because he pulled his hamstring on what, August the 5th? Mm-hmm. And then on the 12th of September, the season started and he's a race against time to get it. And I just think, genuinely, I really think he's an incredible player and he's really suffered this year because of this season. And I just hope that that doesn't do it for him at Chelsea, you know? Like, I just think that he's really, you know, the way he plays, he's got that explosive ability to get past players. And I always think about like what he did to Mendy in the game against City when the season started, where he just completely embarrassed him, and that was sort of like Pulisic at his best. And so you think about him struggling like that, and then you think about other players like Ziyech and that have struggled to come in. And so, yeah, to bring it back to the point, I just think that with Tuchel, I think he's doing exactly what you'd expect. I think this team is where you'd expect it to be. And he's just doing enough to get us through to the end of the season. If that means we get some good results, like turning over Liverpool, which is always, always a delight. And then we get into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. I think that's a positive, right? But I can't really think that we should be doing much beyond that. But I think for him, yeah, we can't judge him until November, December time, which it'd be totally unfair of us to do that.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like we think through these big picture things as well. I think I was kind of trying to think through my lineup again. And like, I really want to see Callum Hudson-Odoi play. I just feel like, I know he took a knock, you know, against Liverpool and I'd be subbed off, but he just seems to be such a bright spot. And why curb his momentum right now if we don't have to? But I mean, you're sitting here going, well, the other option is Reece James, who Nick, obviously you put in. It's like, what a great one to kind of depth chart you can have over there. But they're wildly different players. And I would love it if we could go out with like an Alonso, Callum Hudson-Odoi wingback, because then they're just more offensive. I just want to go at people, go with this Everton team, attack them. I don't want to sit in and kind of wait if we don't have to. But we'll have to kind of obviously see what Mr. Tuchel comes out with. And I guess what do we have about a little, I don't know. I'm not even trying to do the math. 14 hours until the lineup comes out or something like that. So anyways.
What do you guys think of this system? Sorry, just to cut in, just quickly, because like I was saying, I'm worried about if they played this system forever, say under Tuchel, what it would mean for certain players. Does that concern anyone, or is it just me sort of being a pedant?
I think for right now it's fine, and honestly, it's enough of a difference from, you know, other kind of more higher possession based systems out there. Like, there's a defensive solidity that we have that will help us against teams like City and Liverpool, and maybe deeper in the Champions League, but certainly in the Premier League, like, you have to score goals. And like, this is just, it's not been a goal scoring system. I'll say that. It's not been something that's a lot more free flowing than I think most people expected that of him when he got here, because it was time at Dortmund and PSG. So I'm hopeful he can find a balance. I think the personnel is kind of dictating what system he plays right now a little bit. So that's just me, Gary.
Well, would you be like worried?
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
I think to your point, Gary, like, there are players, you know, like Kurt Zuma, right? You know, he was a standout first name on the team sheet under a back four. Right now looks to be the last choice center back available for the team. And maybe the question is, you know, if Everton comes around knocking again at the end of the season and says, hey, £35 million, you ready to go? If we're going to play a back three heading in next season, if Tuchel wants to kind of go that way, wants to keep it up, he might be out. And so I think there are players like that who, you know, we might start having to draw the question mark around. And then on the flip side, there are players like Andreas Christensen who look to be out, who might now be so resurgent and getting a, you know, 4-year deal. So it's wild times at Chelsea.
Yeah, because my concern is for Reece James, because Hudson-Odoi has done so well in that position that you're like, oh, like, you know, what does this mean for James now? And if it goes on, is he going to be happy to sit there while he's still coming through, where, you know, he hasn't got any divine right to be playing? He's not a, you know, even this season, he was playing well, but it was still sort of like a breakout season, you know what I mean, where he wasn't fully pushing Aspi out, right? So when you look at this new system now, and I feel like, is James going to get left behind if it's something that they stick to? And where I'm really, really worried, and this might sound like a bit of hyperbole, but I'm really worried about beyond this season where it does leave Mount, because I just don't think playing as those inside forwards, Tuchel is going to keep him playing as an inside forward for the rest of his term as manager. You know, what? How do you fit Havertz and Mount into this system together, which is what the challenge is, right? It's sort of like, I don't know if you guys, and, you know, forgive me if I'm being ignorant here, I don't know if you guys know about the Lampard-Gerrard debate, which was the big thing that dominated the English national team for so long. And you had these two incredible talents, and I always maintain the worst thing that happened for English football is that Gerrard didn't sign for Chelsea, because Mourinho would have shown Eriksen how to play those two together and he would have done it. And I just look at it now and I feel like Havertz was such a big signing in terms of the price. He's gonna, when he's fit and he's over, you know, he's overcome the physical issues and whatnot, because, yeah, I do feel for him because he's had such a tough season in terms of COVID and everything else as well. I just feel like, how do you put in this system, how do those two coexist? They just don't. So who's going to fall by the wayside? Are they going to let their shiny £72 million record signing disappear like Kepa has? Or is Mount going to suffer in a way? I don't know. I'm just sort of like trying to think about what it means beyond this season. It does concern me because I feel like there's sort of square pegs and round holes that works for the short term. But what does it mean for the long term? And does that mean as well then that when Chelsea have allowed talents to go in the past because of the systems and that they didn't fit it, and then in the end, like 4 years later, they regretted it because they got to a point where it's like, oh, we could have had that player now, but we've got to go spend $80 million to sort of replace a player that we could have had patience with, you know?
It's part of the problem, though, of how this organization functions, though, you know, Gary, like, there is no like codified system, you know, from the team perspective. Like, there isn't a 4-3-3 that exists at every level, down to the youth levels, you know. So you're not buying players for a system. You're buying players based on manager preference. And you have a weird amalgamation of players in here who, some of which fit a 3-4-3 clearly. And you look at our defense and like that group is clearly very comfortable in the system. And then you have a midfield that's been kind of weirdly resurgent, you know, in Kovacic and Jorginho. And, you know, they look like they're playing back to their best now. And then you have the forwards, which don't look comfortable. They're, you know, the flow offensively isn't comfortable. The wingbacks were a little interesting. You know, I think it's partly down to how we do business as a club. And
it's very odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just always, it's the one thing that's always frustrated me, because it sort of stifles progress, where I think that, you know, people, and I apologize if I digress and I've sort of, you know, got in the way of what your main discussion was, but it's sort of just an important point where I feel like, you know, they go with one thing and then they suddenly change their mind because they're worried about what's going on elsewhere. And I just feel like, stop worrying about what everyone else is doing. Just get your house in order. And, you know, people can talk about, oh, but it's the hire and fire culture worked. yeah, it works, not because of the managers, because of the players. When you had Cech, Cole, JT, you know, Lampard, Essien, Drogba. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of like a team that back then in the mid-2000s and then into winning the Champions League when that team won it, it never should have. But do you know what I mean? It's like that team sort of picked itself and it was easy for managers to come in because they had that spine that they could sort of spin everything else off. But you look at it now and you're like, there is no spine. It's just become this patchwork squad where, you know, it's great to see Christensen playing the way he is. And I know he's come through the youth system, but, you know, suddenly, like Dan said, you get Zuma sort of left by the wayside, but then for losing Zuma, you get a Christensen. And I just look at it and just feel like that's why Chelsea have always had this issue with keeping players, you know, and everyone likes to talk about Salah and De Bruyne, but they happen because they left in with a short-term view, you know, in terms of...
Yeah, I think the one thing I would say, Gary, is, you know, at least, you know, someone like Reese, you know, has played in a back three in the academy structure before. And maybe then that's the evolution for him is he gets pushed one row back. Obviously, Asby is an Iron Man in the way he continues to be available, has played, I think, the most minutes under Tuchel since he's arrived. Maybe that's the thought or the progression there is that maybe you look at Reese coming back a little bit further. You know, that would be kind of a different thing to look at, too. So, like, I think they're, you know, at least the Cobham crew as it is, you know, have usually had experience in one or more positions. And so in that regard, you know, there's maybe a little bit more that they can offer versus, you know, some of the more senior players who get brought in who we might deem as specialists who, you know, where we need to kind of go after more generalist style players who can be a little bit more flexible and be a little bit more fluid and allow managers to be more creative with what we provide them versus giving them one specific profile player that only they will ever use.
Do you not think that pushing Reece James into that three-man defense sort of takes away what the strengths of his game are? Because I think he's obviously a good defender, which we've seen. But I think where he really excels is when he adds that extra dimension to the attack. And when you play in that three-man back line, I know obviously Aspi sort of defied that when he scored that, you know, amazing goal against Burnley where he ran like the length of the pitch, but you know, you take away something from James there, which is what I mean about, you know, you sort of start to, for the system as it is now, you start taking away from players in terms of what their attributes are. And I feel like it's a little bit, look, time will tell, right? But it's just a little bit concerning. I know it's sort of, I'm being a bit of an arse, really, by saying that. So I'm like, well, you know, you're winning matches and you're not conceding goals. What the hell are you complaining about, mate? But I just look at the long term and it just sort of worries me because we've gone from Conte, who played this system, into Sarri, who was just Sarri, into Lampard, who was trying to create an identity as a coach at the same time as creating an identity as a team. Then suddenly you cross over into Tuchel and you're sort of like, whoa, where is this team? And are we going to have that issue of, and that's why I think that, you know, there's always been that issue of trying to integrate so many young players that I think this crop is sort of the, you know, the cream of the crop in terms of what we've had in most recent years. But, you know, for the young talent, that I just look at it and think, oh, is it going to work? And it just really, really worries me. And I don't mean that for the sake of academy talent, I just think, but you've got it. So play to their strengths. And Reece James's strength isn't to sit on the side of a back three, you know, and it could be that he reinvents himself and he becomes like the best player in the world in that position. But I feel like you see what he does in the middle and final third, and that's sort of what he's on the pitch to do. So it'd be disappointing to see him dropping players like an inside back, if you know what I mean.
Well, a couple of things. One, we need to host we can do a whole Chelsea group therapy session for sure. So we can go on all these different topics. And two, maybe we can come hijack your clubhouse on Chelsea tomorrow.
Yeah, buddy.
Gary.
You should.
So plug that.
Because I apologize. I have hijacked tomorrow. This. I have hijacked it and I do apologize.
You've hijacked it in the best ways possible, though. Anytime, like, we appreciate you. I think if you guys don't know Gary, he's interesting that he has worked for the club, then worked for Bleacher Report, then went off to the Sahara Desert to find himself, and now he's back working for the club and doing stuff. So, like, Gary, you're very well connected spiritually.
I didn't go to the Sahara Desert. I went to Joshua Tree, and I took a trip, man, and I'm still on it.
I appreciate it. But no, like I said, so it's really great. So I recommend if you're in this room, you love Chelsea, give Gary a follow. He's great, great resource and great ideas. But I do want to bring it back to Everton just a little bit here.
Gary had the best tweet during the Liverpool game, though.
yes.
It was the one where you were like, Mason Mount's only playing because of Tuchel or something like that. And
Mason Mount only gets in this team because Tuchel is manager. And I think it was funny, but I think the replies were funnier.
Well, and the good news is there can be some high-level creativity on the socials. They just needed a good kind of platform to run it off of. But okay, Gary, I'm gonna share the mic with someone else. So much love, even though I removed you. But we want to flip. So we usually spend half the time talking about Chelsea, now half the time talking about Everton, back and forth. So we want to flip back to Everton with that perspective. So, look, guys, there and girls and friends and everybody, there's a lot of things when it comes to Everton that can be threats. You know, under Frank Lampard last season, every time we went into a match, always one of us was saying, well, I am worried about set pieces, and Everton could be the same way. And so we always want to say, who is the Everton player you're most scared of heading into this match? As we've mentioned, there's quite a few people out injured or recently returning from injury. So there might not be that many people, but I want someone else as well as Dan, Nick, and myself to jump in and talk to us about who they think can really hurt Chelsea in this match. So from my standpoint and my perspective, I think what I want to, you know, touch on, well, let's just go to Raul. I could talk, but Raul, jump on in, sir. I appreciate you being active in the chat. Let me guess, longtime listener, first time speaker.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
I love it. All right, man, talk us through it.
Well, for me, it's Richarlison. He has scored the four of the five last goals they have scored. So, yeah, him for sure.
I think that makes it, I mean, because the biggest thing, usually the biggest threat is getting scored on. Richarlison has done well against us, I think, a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and the only goal that wasn't scored by Richarlison was a Sigurdsson penalty. So he has been – and look, I mean, they got thrashed by City, but they've also had some sneaky good results as well that have brought them back up to this position where now they are looking to get back into fourth place. So, yeah, I think Richarlison is the one that I would point out to Raul as this day – formidable striker, you know, especially with the back three and, you know, maybe him kind of coming in more centrally. It's going to be, you know, up to Aspi and Christensen. And maybe the question is going to be about just, you know, we saw against Mane, who's maybe not as physically combative in the way that Richarlison is, what that's going to look like. We also have Calvert-Lewin, too. I mean, he's been a little off his game, but you know, they will be on both of them will be on the pitch, and it's going to be a question of, you know, who's going to draw more attention, and whoever that is going to give the other a little bit more space.
I think the Calvert-Lewin Richarlison partnership is where I tend to look. But personally, Nick, I'm going after Gylfi Sigurdsson. Anytime you have someone who can shoot from range and has the pinpoint precision that he does to set up the play, I'm always kind of worried about the assister, just like I was with James Ward-Prowse. But in your mind, where are you looking for? And while Nick talks, I want someone else to request to speak so we can get another opinion in here too.
Yeah, you stole it from me. That was going to be my sneaky one.
Perfect.
I know everyone's looking at Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison, but yeah, I agree. I mean, if you think back to the game in December that we lost, which was a terrible result for this team and kind of set us on a negative trajectory. This was Sigurdsson getting in between spaces and finding little pockets to pass in. Clearly, you know, he had the penalty as well. But yeah, he does worry me a little bit. He's playing a lot better than he has the last couple of seasons as well.
All right, Ricky, you're in, sir. Which player are you worried about?
Hey, thanks for letting me join in. I haven't been super in touch with the Everton injury list, but I got to agree with the assister's point. I think James Rodriguez, if he's playing, but really you can throw in Sigurdsson and Ducouré can even find a pass. I mean, the fact is, I mean, Everton are doing really well this season and they were not expecting it. So I don't think they're really going to be looking to just kind of sit in their shell and try to take a point. I think they're going to go for it. And I think
James is out, Ricky, unfortunately. I think he's
doubtful. It could be sneaky from Carlo. He'll definitely be back the week after, but he's doubtful for this one.
I just see Everton going for it this game. And so I really kind of throw in the entire midfield in that. I think so many times we've seen midfielders drop into the back line against us just because we're high pressing. But I think that we're really going to see Everton try to spring out from that low block and really go for it this game. So I'm just worried about like how up for the test that they are and really going to give us a run for our money.
No, it's totally fair. Appreciate that, Ricky. Essentially, that's a lot of it comes down to, again, we're going to have a two-man midfield going against a three-man midfield, and I got to try to figure out where we can cover a lot of ground from them. So we'll have to figure it out. All right. Let's see, Ty. What's up, man?
Going on, guys?
Bring it. Yo. Bring the heat. What are you worried about from Everton?
I was trying to get your guys' take on how you think Tuchel is going to – or I guess who you think is going to put in the left wing – or the right wing back between Cho and Reese.
For sure. I went on record right away, and I said I would really love to see Cho Alonso at the wing backs just to be more aggressive. Okay. I want us to go at them, especially kind of with the injuries they have. But I think, Nick, you were hoping for Reece James just for a little bit more defensive solidity. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just looking at balance, man. I think Richarlison's going to attack down the left primarily. So I want Reece there to kind of counter him and kind of body him. But I think Alonso will have more license to attack on the other side. And I think we could probably get him further upfield just because I don't think they're as strong. And you know, even though Coleman's playing okay, I don't think it's necessarily the same threat as like Richarlison would pose. So, I'm going for a little bit more balance than you and Brandon.
All right. Well, yeah, I appreciate that, Ty. Gabriel, are you going to jump in and give us your thoughts on a deadly weapon at Everton that maybe we haven't touched on?
I would love to. Just checking in. Is Tom Davies, do we know if he's injured?
He is probably going to be able to play.
Okay, so for me, if I'm trying to be big brain and a guy I'm worried about, Tom Davies, you know, is someone who kind of to me feels like a Mason Mount kind of player who's just an engine everywhere disrupting the play. So in terms of someone who's not going to quit and put their head down, Tom Davies is kind of my one I'm a little worried about in his engine in the midfield.
All right. I mean, that's fair. I mean, he's a poor man's Mason Mount, but I appreciate –
No, for sure. He wishes he could be Mason Mount. He's trying to go for a skater look. Doesn't work. But, you know, he's a poor man's Mason Mount.
I love it. No, that's
fair. ripping cigarettes at halftime. That's that.
Oh, Torin, nice to meet you, sir. What do you have?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Doing great,
good.
Man.
The thing that worries me the most about Chelsea against Everton is when they press us, we – do a lot of dumb things sometimes at the back, put ourselves under pressure. We don't need to do that. No one player really scares me against Everton, honestly. But I think we can put ourselves in bad positions, turn the ball over in bad areas. Let me just hear y'all thoughts on that.
Well, honestly, Torin, that is that's the best way for us to lead into the three reasons why Chelsea will win. Or three reasons why Chelsea will drop points. So, Cal, I'm going to have you sit there for a second. The three reasons why we think Chelsea will win, gentlemen, I can lead us off. I think to start, the biggest reason Chelsea will win, as I said before, is form. We are in great form, defensively super sound, limiting teams to one, maybe two shots a game. Obviously, figuring out the offensive third, but with the injuries Everton have, I think that our form will just enable us to go at them and hopefully get a couple goals on them, which I know isn't probably the most popular prediction, but at least that's where I feel. So, Nick, a reason why you think Chelsea will win, please?
I think a reason why we'll win is hopefully this team doesn't try and dominate possession so far upfield, i.e., you know, basically in Everton's final third and creates basically no passing lanes for themselves. I hope it's a little bit more balanced, and I think if we are more balanced and, you know, it's 55-45 possession instead of 70-30, that will allow space in behind for Timo and for Tammy and for, you know, for those types of attackers to have a little bit more room to run. So that's my.
Okay. And then before we get to our lovely guest, Dan, over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to say that Timo Werner finally finds an iota of luck and is able to score a goal, which would be a reason why. But I think it goes larger to the attack that, you know, Tammy with his sneaky Instagram post, will he start? Will he start? I think if we get Tammy, Timo, and Mason kind of combining as our attacking trio, I would feel very confident. You know, Everton on a whole tend to average in the 1.5 to shot, you know, near 2 in terms of goals allowed expected over the past couple of matches. So I would anticipate that we should be able to find goodness even with limited attackers going forward.
All right. By the way, did you see that a lot of the Chelsea boys call him Timo Werner when they were wishing him happy birthday? Can we take the littlest bit of credit for that, or maybe influence?
No, because he was called that back in the Bundesliga.
All right, so never mind. All right,
as long as it's not Timmy Werner, that's like,
yeah. that's fair.
That nickname was flat out garbage. Timmy.
All right. It is true. All right, Cal, you've had some time to think about it. Give us a reason why you think Chelsea will win tomorrow.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to speak, Brandon.
Of course.
I just think, look at the last few matches. I think we've looked a lot better in the attack. I think we're slowly figuring it out, and we're due a few goals, you know. We haven't been the best recently, but Timo's looked good. I think Pulisic will play, and I think he'll really shine. So I think just we're due a few goals.
All right. That's fair. Miles, as we work through this, what about you, sir?
I think it's going to be an interesting fixture tomorrow. Just think we want it back at home at Stamford Bridge. I think Chelsea is going to pull in a big 3 points and defend kind of in the cup for a battle. It's great because we're kind of in need of a goal scoring opportunity. So I'm hoping we can shoot a couple to inspire more confidence and strike of position.
Yeah. Look, Taylor, I love it. We not only are we only 1 point above Everton right now, which that top four battle, like you said, is really tight. We've only got a +1 goal difference on Leicester. So, again, if we can get closer to the +23 of Manchester United in second, that's only going to help us. I appreciate that. Miles, Mr. Miles G, what about you?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Sure can.
Great. Thank you for having us on. First, like, how's everyone doing today?
You know, it's a good Sunday. I mean, outside of the results, which, you know, the Spurs one was all get out.
Well, that sounds great. So just kind of think through tomorrow, a lot of hype going around it. And something that we haven't mentioned, and before I talk about it, I'm going to knock on wood before I jinx it so that y'all can hear it. But we're playing against the clumsiest keeper, in my opinion, in the Premier League.
Truth.
So not only, and I'm going to build on what Jake said earlier about Timo Werner's brace, but I think we could also get a win if we can get a Jordan Pickford own goal.
I would love that. My goalkeeper unionship only goes so far, and it does not go to Jordan Pickford. I just lines have been drawn in the sand. I like it. So Miles out there calling out a weakness of Everton, which could actually be a strength for us. Ty, I think you were next, sir.
Yeah, I think that the team is finally figuring out who exactly Timo Werner is, and they're finally putting balls over the top, as we saw last game. So if they stick to that and Timo starts, I think we'll do great.
All right. Look, as we can see, it always comes down to goals. Timo, Olivier, Tammy, whoever it may be, we just need some goals. So, Kyle, what are you thinking?
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, cool. Thanks for having us on to speak. I appreciate it. That's very cool. And, yeah, so for the two things I was thinking about, I wanted to mention in regards to this stuff is one was touched on a little bit before, the press. Like, if they do press us, like, pretty hard or, like, heavily up the field, like, what do you guys think about that? Like, how do you think we'll handle that? And then the other thing, I guess, the big thing for me is that I've been pretty excited to see Kai come back to, like play a game or start a game would be ideal, but we haven't really seen that much yet. Do you think he'll get a chance to maybe do that in this game? And then lastly, I'll just say for myself, because I've been a loyal Timo supporter. I have him on the fantasy team, and I've had him for the whole season, actually. And obviously, you know, it hasn't worked out too well for me in that regard. But hopefully, this end of the season here, he'll come through and, you know.
A lot of zeros on the tally, my man. You got
I'm still competing. I'm still competing right now for the, you know, for the top three or so. So I'm still in there somewhere around about the right area.
I'll take the pressing thing and then I'll punt it over to Dan and Brandon. But I think Liverpool, you know, if we just look at recent matches, right? Liverpool pressed those really high up the field, and there were a couple of dicey moments. Don't get me wrong. Jorginho running back towards his own goal is not what I want to ever see again in my life, much like Pedro doing the same thing back in 2017. But I think the team handled that relatively well. You know, it wasn't perfect and it wasn't always pretty, but I think they did pass out of it. I think my hope is that when we get high pressed, you know, you have weapons that can run in behind. So a long ball is not necessarily a wasted ball in this system. And I would love to see the team, you know, hit a couple more searching balls to see if Timo can get on the end of it. Cause I think we showed that route one worked pretty well against Liverpool.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real fair shout. You know, I think that, you know, hopefully Kyle having Timo on the team wasn't the jinx, and maybe we should just request that he removes Timo from his FPL team in the hopes that it spurs a resurgence from him. The jury will still be out until we potentially test that theory.
Dan, it was Kyle's fantasy team all along. Just like,
oh,
Agatha.
My gosh, we figured it out. We cracked the code. It's like the end of the Da Vinci Code or something. Yeah, but I do think we'll cope fine with the press. I think, you know, the Liverpool match, you know, they were pressing on us. Madrid, gave us a lot of opportunity. I'm actually not worried about pressing as much because we've been comfortable. I think it's about what Tuchel has continued to talk about, Brandon, and what happens in the final 20. You know, what are we going to do that's going to allow us to actually score? Because, again, we have not been giving teams great opportunities to shoot on us. You know, we are in the 2 to 3 to 4 shots on target per game. And we are in the expected goals allowed category of like 0.3, 0.5, 0.6. Most of our opposition is not finding any goodness. And so in my thought, it's about how do we actually just make the final ball happen so that we can move up from these expected goals for us in the 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 and get back to a expected goal of 2.2, 2.5 and really start to generate some offensive thrust.
All right. Well, I hate to be that guy, but sometimes as a fan, you need to be realistic and assess your weaknesses and your threats so that you can hopefully try to get around them. So while we had 3 points of why we think Chelsea will pick up the points, we should also try to think about how are some reasons that Chelsea could drop points to maybe a tie or a loss against Everton. So again, we'll go around the horn. If you out there in the room want to throw in a reason that you're worried about what might happen to Chelsea that forfeits us some points, go ahead and throw you know, request to speak. So Nick, I'll go back to you. What is one of the reasons that you think Chelsea might drop points tomorrow?
Set pieces. We kind of talked a little bit about that, but there was a little blurb in the pre-match program from Chelsea that said No team has scored more from their set plays than Everton's 12. They almost have 1 in 3 set piece goals to their tally. So that's look, they're a tall, physical team. And I want to make sure that, you know, I just say that out loud, knock on wood. Hopefully we're prepared for that. But yeah, without Thiago Silva in there, I think this is an area that worries me.
All right. Fair enough. Jonathan, before we get you, I'm going to go over to Dan first.
Oh, a reason why we will lose our drop points. I mean, not executing on our game plan, because I think at minimum you would anticipate that we could get a draw from every game that we're running into right now. It's really about, can you actually score a goal? And so, yeah, if we don't execute our game plan and we let some of the defensive stability slip, then we will lose points. But otherwise, we will drop points. Again, if we can't score a goal, though, we won't win the points.
Okay. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the chat, man. What are your thoughts ahead of this one?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You're good to go.
All right. I think that, you know, if they sit back and they just defend, I think, you know, it could cause us some trouble. Let's be honest. We haven't scored that many goals, like, in the last, you know, run we've had, you know. So, like, if they just frustrate us and they, you know, we get chances and we don't convert, I think that's when we could drop points. And that's what I'm really nervous about tomorrow. Yes.
Look, it's rational, right? It's reasonable. your fears are, we've had that issue with teams that really defend with 10 and they play with a low block. It's like, what is that creative piece to unlock it? If Timo starts, then you lose the height, so you can't even really get in at them. But I think the good news is that Everton, with their back three, they look to play. We know Carlo Ancelotti loves to play football a certain way, so we'll have to see. But again, I think that was actually kind of where I was going to go too, Jonathan, is if they bunker up, if they lock it in and we can't unlock this 10-man puzzle of blue shirts in front of us, it's going to be really hard for us, especially if you have a Jorginho and Kovacic midfield. I mean, there's really not a lot of long ball passing or early counterattacks are going to happen. So that's super fair. Kyle, you're back.
Yeah, I was just going to say in relation to this section, because I'm actually kind of so one of the things for me, one of the big questions for me is, like, our team hypothetically or like on paper has a lot of, you know, creative talent essentially, like going forward and at the top of the end of the field, if you hypothetically, but, you know, it's not really ending up that way throughout the season practically, like in a matter of practice. So, like, this might be, you know, a little bit too much for this section, or like maybe something to cover in a whole later section, but what do you guys think? Like, what are your thoughts on, like, why we're just not being creative enough or having that finishing, the final finishing cutting edge in the final third?
Nick, I'm going to bring you in on this one. This has kind of been like a cross that you've kind of been bearing in the last few weeks under Tuchel. You've been analyzing the front. We've even got you into XGs and minutes played and things that you never thought you'd be analyzing. But a lot of it comes down to your eye test.
You brought up the most important stat of all, which is the NPET, the Nick's patented eye test, which is coming to a stat line near you soon. But, like, I really think it's because of the way that Chelsea is playing a high possession game, and it's usually playing a high possession game in the opposition third, which leaves very little space for players that are that require space. So Timo, Mason, you know, even Giroud requires space, right? I think Tammy is actually one of the few players who is more comfortable in tight spaces. You know, which maybe is reflective of his team high in goals this year. But it's an interesting problem that Tuchel has to solve. And I think he solves it by not pressing so high and allowing for space in behind. And, you know, I think some of the passing in the final third has just been atrocious too. I mean, we could just call that what it is. It's just not been very good. So not to ramble too much here, but yeah, I mean, this is an area that I have I've been quite annoyed by for some time, even back under Lampard. And
all right, Ty, and then we're going to go to score predictions. Ty, go ahead.
As I was sitting here thinking about, like, I don't know what I would expect tomorrow, I guess, for the game. You were thinking, you guys were talking about dropping points and stuff. I just think about all of the times that I've watched Chelsea, you know, have an opening 20 minutes that they're on top of it. You know, everyone's on their game. They score a goal or they get lucky with a call or whatever, and they're up. And then for the rest of the next, you know, through the half and then the beginning of the second half, they're just comfortable. They're not looking to, like, kill the game. So I think tomorrow, like, if Chelsea come out on top and they look good and then they do that thing where they get comfortable, like, I could easily see this, you know, ending in a draw or a loss.
Again, it's a play that we've all seen run its course, you know, with an intermission at halftime. But we can still, while I think the good news is everyone out here and again, you can start putting your score predictions in the chat, is that I think we're all far more optimistic than pessimistic. Like, to be fair, our concerns are if Chelsea doesn't do the business. It's not, ooh, Everton and their free-flowing attack and their crazy Regista or their, you know, amazing, you know, playmaker in James Rodriguez. We're not there. All right. So as we look at these scores, we're seeing wins for the most part. And so I will go out there. I've said I think we're going to win 2-0. Do not ask me where the goals come from because I have no idea. I could, if I wanted a fluke prediction, I'd say probably a penalty and we hit someone on their counterattack. Other than that, I don't know where the goals are going to come from. I just have a feeling with the way things are going, we can win 2-0, mainly because Edouard Mendy is the freaking man. Dan, over to you.
I think it's a 1-0 victory to Chelsea. It's the most logical possible result based upon our form and the way that we've been playing and how Everton play. If I were going to bet on this, that is the bet that I would make. Just, you know, that's how it's been, Nick.
Sorry, I was on mute. I predicted the 1-0 on Elizabeth's channel this morning. I'm sticking with it. Have to. I'm hopeful that the goal comes from open play, and that it's not bungled off of Pickford or any of these other crazy. You know, I'll take a win in whatever way we can get it. But in a perfect world, we would score from open play. It would be a beautiful goal that sets our minds at ease about the offensive production.
All right, Nash, 1 second. I've got Matthew says 3.5 for up 3.5, 2-0, Jake, 2 Mo Werner. Oh my gosh. Ty says 1-0 for sure. Mason Mount on the goal. Taylor says 1-0 question mark. Dan likes suffer ball. Michael says 1-0. We can't score. Let's see. Oh, Matt clarified 1-0 Chelsea, 1-1-2-1, whatever he just says will win. Cal says 2-0. So Mr. Big Nash himself, one of the most popular people in our Discord server, in case you're unfamiliar with it, we appreciate you, sir.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. This is awesome. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win with a Jorginho penalty, and I think that's my prediction.
All right, that is wild.
But the fact that Jorginho takes the penalty?
I was going to ask, Nash.
Yeah, because Mason also was like, you know, Tuchel did call out that it was going to be either Jorginho or Mason the last time. So, you know, it seems like it could not be a guarantee if we get a penalty and Jorginho's on the pitch, it might be another player who takes it.
Maybe, but I think when Mount and Jorginho are on the pitch, I think Jorginho takes it, at least for tomorrow.
You have confidence. I do not. I would even love to see Timo in front of him. But look, Jorginho has done the business. He could see, but Nash, heroic. Check the chat. A lot of your loyal followers are shouting your name, and it's well deserved. Score predictions, as we've continued to see, everyone seems to be overwhelmingly in favor that Chelsea will pick up the points. So I put Chelsea versus Everton banter. No idea if there's any Everton fans in there, but if they are, please open up the speaker request line so we can get your thoughts, because it's been all about us. But at the end of the day, I think we're all pretty consistent on Chelsea winning. So if I don't get any more speaker requests, I do want to give it to Dan to kind of hit on our last point. And we are getting ready to wrap up. We're just over an hour. We thoroughly enjoyed this. And again, before Dan gets it a plug, check, listen to us on our podcast. We're going to be posting it tonight at midnight, so you can listen to it pre-match if you want to see what your voice sounds like. It's always a fun game that we've been playing on our podcast. So, Dan.
It's real weird to hear yourself for the first time.
Dan, go ahead. What is a fun fact that is happening this week that we can help deepen their love for Chelsea?
Is it Founders Day?
Dan,
is that what we got going on, Nick?
That is correct, Dan.
Oh, yes. My gosh. Did I win a prize? I feel like I should win a prize.
Well, we all won the prize of Chelsea Football Club when the club was founded, Dan. That's the fun part about this. March 10th, 1905. Tell us about it, Dan.
Well, I don't have the script open, but I can just riff off the top of my head a little bit.
Dan.
You know, because I took a walking history tour with Rick Glanville, club historian. And for those who don't know, at the Rising Sun Pub, which is directly across from the space now known as Stamford Bridge. It was there that a couple of guys the Rising Sun originally, Butcher's Hook nowadays, for those who maybe have been in the area.
That's the building it is now. Come on.
Okay, well, you're getting the semantics. And, you know, I want to be specific with the audience that at night, you know, in the time of the founding, it was known as the Rising Sun, which is also why on the draft that we did, Joe Tweeds called it the Rising Suns, is what he used for his team name. So we just got to make sure that people know these things. These are important facts, Nick.
Very true. We are really excited about Chelsea's history. Last year, if you're not aware, you should go search for this. We did a 3-part history of Chelsea Football Club series with Rick Glanville, as Dan mentioned, the club's official historian. Rick is a wealth of knowledge that we have not even begun to tap into. And we did about 5 hours of recording with him this time last year during the beginning of the pandemic. He's unbelievable. He shared knowledge with us. And I'll give you a little teaser about this, that Chelsea's official color at the beginning was actually more of a teal blue than it was a royal blue. It was the Eton blue, if you've ever seen that color. And he shares just every factoid that you would ever want about the club during this podcast series. So we'll tweet out the links to it on Founders Day. It's a really great way to spend 4 or 5 hours of your time if you're interested in that. And yeah, celebrate Founders Day on Wednesday. It's a momentous day that's brought us all together, which is the great part.
The other thing is that Joe Tweeds in his Kings Road newsletter did put the Eton blue in there as well in his most recent one. So for those who have taken a look on the Patreon page and have read his wonderful missives, it did include that peculiar shade of blue, Brandon.
Yeah, that was fun. The draft was fun. The 3-part history series on literally the day Chelsea were founded and a little bit before that up to current day. 3-part series was fantastic. So yeah, if you're new to us, we have a podcast called London is Blue Podcast. You can find it on all podcast platforms. Find us on social media at London Blue Pod. And we have a Patreon page with the Discord connected to it. Again, we have a very awesome Chelsea community that we built, and that's awesome because it's not about us. It's about a like-minded community of individuals who just have a huge passion for the club. So thank you everyone who's still with us on our first locker room. We're going to be doing these weekly at a minimum. And if it gets to be a lot of fun, we might even start doing them more frequently. So again, just thank you everyone that's out here. Go listen to the podcast if you haven't before. And for all those of you that are in here that you do know us, go listen to it so you can hear yourself and engage with it. It will be fun. So Torin is starting to steal my outro tagline. So I feel like I got to say it, everyone, but, enjoy the game tomorrow. It's during the workday, so hopefully you get to see it. Again, sick, it's a notes. Big one. Yeah, exactly. You know, call in sick, get the doctor's appointment scheduled, whatever you got to do, block the calendar, because it's going to be a big one for that race to top four. Tuchel riding his undefeated wave. We won all 3 points. So anyways, that's a wrap from us. So again, thank you all out there. But until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. keep the blue flag flying high. Awesome. That was my official outro, but the rest of you, thanks. Honestly, this was super fun hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome.
What's awesome about it is that all of you guys jumped in and engaged with us. It's so much more fun. It was a conversation. So last chance, if anyone has any final thoughts or wants to get on stage one more time.
Encore.
It was fun picking on Jake. Jake, did you figure out how to sub-tweet Nick on this platform, or are we still working on that? Because I can submit feature requests to the developers. They were asking for feedback.
Life is a sub-tweet of Nick Verlaney. Have we not understood this yet?
Oh, I love it. All right. Well, it looks like everyone's happy. Get some sleep. Big one tomorrow. We'll be on Twitter if you want to kind of follow our reactions. Otherwise, we have a massive community on Discord. We have a huge Match Day Madness thread that's just full of banter since we can't go to the pubs for most of us. So thanks, everyone, for hanging out. I'm going to end it, but it's been a real blast. Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.